With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
That UFO podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. Zencastr is a modern web-based solution for high-quality audio and video podcast production. With a full suite of professional tools, Zencastr allows podcasters to quickly and seamlessly record their guests remotely and produce their podcasts in studio quality. Check out the links in the show description to find out more. Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast update for you. We've not done one of these for a couple of weeks. I've managed to get Dan to join me. We've been chatting away for a couple of minutes before we hit the record button, so I think Dan's calmed down from the laughing now that he can say hi. Hi, Dan.
I'm a little bit calm. I have the giggles a little bit. That was yeah. It's a shame we don't capture that stuff so people can listen to it. I think they'd enjoy it, but I know. Maybe not for public consumption.
Yeah, people always ask, like, oh, you should like hearing us talk, which is great, and we do really appreciate that, and this is kind of what these update pods are, to be honest, like us talking through the news and some bits and pieces and what's going on. But yeah, some of the conversation is kind of, do you know what, it still is UFO, UAP related and stuff, but yeah, some of it's 18 plus section. So you like the serious objective chat, and that's what we're trying to stick to. So listen, I put out some updates earlier on the Patreon for anyone who saw that, and on the Discord chat, which you can sign up to if you're part of the Patreon. If you are signed up to Apple Podcast subscriptions, and I just have to clarify, it's different between signing up to Apple Podcasts and paying the small amount. I think it's a couple of dollars or a couple of pounds to get the ad-free and early access content. Just get in touch with me if you are signed up to Apple, and I can give you the Discord link as well. That's absolutely fine. A couple of people have asked to do that. The Discord community is pretty cool. It's grown quite quickly, and it's just another place for people to chat. So there's some good conversation in there. But the point being,
can I just say one of the things I really like about Discord is that when you hashtag something, it creates kind of a separate conversation in the sidebar. So if, say, someone mentions quantum mechanics and you're only interested in that conversation and you want to pick up instead of searching through, you can just hit that hashtag in the sidebar. It's really cool.
I never knew that. Genuinely.
There you go. And you can set them to expire as well. So, you know, we could have had one for the UAPTF report and had it expire on the day that was published. So it's quite cool the way it automates. I hope Twitter has something like that.
And the more you know. So yeah, it's another good place to chat. So yeah, it's just a benefit of being signed up to the Patreon or the Apple Podcast premium subscription. So thank you very much, folks. And just remember, I know I'd mention these now and again, but we got another one-star review a few days ago because someone has gone on to click on the Avi Loeb interview when it was available on the premium service a few days early and complained that it was hidden behind a paywall. It was literally out the half an hour after it was recorded, and then it was released early still for the free feed. So again, folks, we're not hiding content behind paywalls like that. Nothing that would be like important the way we would see it. It just comes out a couple of days early for people. So I do sit up till all hours of the morning, as you've seen, editing this stuff and getting out for people. So it's just have a check or get in touch with us if you think something's missing or not there that should be, because that's all it was. So a few updates if you haven't seen those. Ross Coulthart has asked me to delay for 4 or 5 weeks. Just that he is doing a lot of interviews just now. And to be fair, quite a lot of you have got in touch anyway to say The interviews are all starting to sound quite similar. He's done about 50, I think, in the last couple of weeks, which is just perfectly natural. We do have some other stuff to ask him, and we always try and mix up the questions anyway. But he has assured me that if we leave it 4 or 5 weeks, not only will it be a bit fresher, but there will be some new information for him to discuss as well. So I'm more than happy to delay that by a few weeks. I've still got all the listener questions sent in. If people want to send me over more questions, I would hang off a couple of weeks till we see what develops further. And also, the book is still to be released properly in the UK in paper format, and the US as well. I believe it was put back, so Ross was kind of hoping to delay it just a little bit, given he's done loads of interviews, and right now it's pretty much available on Kindle only. So that's totally fine, and there'll be some more stuff dropping by then as well. Dan, have you read the whole book yet? Or
not yet. I would say I'm about a quarter into it, but I was surprised when I opened it how, you know, it's not a long book, it's just packed with a lot of information. But the amount of interviews that I've heard Ross do, whenever I'm reading the book, I kind of get those accents and stuff that he does in my head. And it's a really enjoyable read. You know, the tone is good. Ross has a playfulness that kind of, he clearly understands the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, like most things in life, it's easily digestible. If you say something heavy, then make a joke.
Yeah, I can't read books on Kindle. I just can't do it. So I have the Audible book, and we'll be kind of ploughing my way through that. I'll be buying the physical copy when it's available as well. So
which is read by Ross, is that right? The Audible?
Yes, it is. Which is always nice when it's read by the author.
Yeah,
he's
for
got
sure.
A pretty cool voice as well. You hear the passion come through in it, which is nice. And he's not got a Scottish accent, so you can understand him. The next one,
when he comes on, can you ask him to do a Scottish accent? I want to hear what his version is.
Can you do a Scottish accent?
No, I'm not even going to try. The only accent I can do is Welshy from Futurama.
Go on.
You're right, Bert. How's it going?
Poor. the next update is that I'm working on a special listener questions episode, different to the call-in. This is a guest that we have had on before, and I'm hoping, and I'll confirm ASAP, that they're going to come on and it will just be listener questions for this guest, and it's someone that people will want to be asking their questions to. So I'll just leave that one hanging there. But as soon as I've got an update, I will let you know, folks. Other guests are in the pipeline. I'm just waiting on confirming some dates with people as well, so I won't announce them just yet. Listener call-in slots are going to open up later on today. This is Wednesday, the 4th of August. If you're listening to this on the day or in the future, if you're in the future, hi, what's it like? Listener call-in slots will open up, and I'll send the links out to anyone who wants to book a slot. Some people have emailed already. Email ufouapam@gmail.com. If you're looking to get involved, I'll be recording listener call-in between Thursday the 5th and Sunday the 8th of August, it should be. So yeah, and there'll be a few different times available for people who are in Australia, in the States, Canada, Europe, all over. So please get in touch with me if you're looking to get involved. Some of the subjects we're looking to discuss are abductions. That's been something that's going on in the Discord chat, and we've been having a kind of good conversation around those. You know, why don't they seem to still happen? But there's been a few theories on that. And virtual conferences is in the news just now, so that's one we'll be discussing, and Dan and I will be discussing in a few minutes on this podcast. And some other subjects. Of course, if you want to discuss something totally unrelated, feel free to do that as well for the listener call-in. On that, after the controversy of the last kind of day or so of the virtual conference being announced with Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and a few other very high profile guests, there was a bit of a kickoff about the $249 price tag. Of course, there are offers straight away for $100 off of that. And again, it's everyone's own entitlement whether they want to go or don't want to go. That's fine. But there's been a lot of conversation around it. I have the organizer and the PR guy both on the podcast this Friday, and I'm going to be discussing with them. It's not an advertisement for the event. I've made that clear to them. I just wanted to give them the opportunity to come on and talk about the event and why it costs what it costs. Maybe people will understand a bit more why they're charging what they're charging for it. But on the other side of things, you know, I've got some difficult questions for them that I hope they can answer as well. So that'll be happening.
I want to see a full cost breakdown.
Yeah, full invoice. I did reach out to them, as it was mentioned online, you know, we could get Joe Murgia, UFO Joe, to go on and transcribe for the event. And obviously people were offering to pay for it and all that kind of stuff. But to be fair, I reached out to the organisers and I asked if they would provide Joe Murgia with a free pass for the 4 days if he would transcribe for people who aren't going to have the funds or are not willing to pay for the ticket. So they're not going to lose out because it's people that wouldn't go anyway. But it looks like they're up for letting Joe attend for free. And Joe will do the hard graft and transcribe all the highlights of those 4 days with those guests, which I think's good of them, you've got to be fair. And at least we're going to see officially from the each day the kind of highlights of those days and any important conversation or points that are brought up. So we're just waiting on the final details of that, but I just thought I would let you know that's something I thought people would benefit from. I'm not looking for a pass for myself or for Dan or anything like that. I just wanted people to benefit. And do you know what? If something is said that's going to be of importance, at least we've got someone there officially, like Joe, who wants to do that kind of work anyway, to transcribe for us. So that was pretty nice of them. Dan, we've won an award, and this is the first time we've both recorded together since that happened. So again, thanks everyone for voting for Dan and I in the podcast in the Quite the Thing Media Awards 2021 for News, Society and Culture. We blew the competition out of the water, Dan. We got a substantial amount of votes. I don't know the number, but I was just told by the guys, Jack and Colin, that it was a landslide on our part. And that's all down to the listeners who voted. So I thought you'd want to say thanks as well.
Yeah, thank you. Big thank you to the listeners. I remember when we did our first one and, you know, I kind of hanged out in anxiety thinking, does even one person want to listen to us talking? And turns out, a few people do. So thank you very, very much. It feels weird, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, at least three people listening to you talking. At least three.
Crazy.
Yeah, it looks like it. And that's two of us are two of those people. So, but thank you, everyone. And on that, you know, we always like to keep moving forward and not rest on our laurels. You are listening to this now because you enjoy what we do. We are up for another award with some esteemed company for Paranormality Radio. I'll put the link in the description, but if you go on there, it's a fan vote. We are up for Best Alien / UFO Podcast. So thank you in advance if you've voted already. If not, please take a couple of seconds to click on the link in the description. Dan and I will sit in silence for the next 3 minutes while you do that. I'm joking, we won't do that, but you could pause it and, you know, pause here, pause here, and go and vote for us, then come back. So thank you very much for that. So listen, into the update, there's quite a bit of news to talk about, Dan, after we had a kind of few weeks of people fighting over not very much just because there wasn't a whole lot of news. I think there was quite a lot. If you didn't even have to dive particularly deep, I don't think. The first one, though, while we're fresh on the subject of this virtual conference. Now, Contact in a Desert has probably been the biggest, most recent one. And again, there was... We done some work for Contact in the Desert, some preview shows to give people a little bit of a taste. I done some preview interviews for the event itself for free for people that, again, couldn't afford to pay the money. I know that's something I couldn't have paid for, so it was good to give some free content for people as well. However, another event got announced in the last day or so with Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, Richard Dolan, Linda Moulton Howe, and other names. So pretty prominent names. Virtual only, again, because of COVID and everything else. But a price tag of $249. Dan, people didn't like the price tag being slapped on of $249 for that. What were your thoughts when you saw the announcement? And your thoughts in general on virtual conferences?
Well, I have to say the observation deck, Richard Dolan's event a little while back where he had Lou come on and talk, that was a paid event. and I was lucky enough, they offered to host my art in the gallery there. And I was able to go and watch those, which was really cool. And it was a really cool space. But what I liked about it was being able to talk to other people. And it was quite a cool moment where all of us was down the front. And there were like 50 people there that, you know, from the community, and everyone's got their mics open and we were all just chatting and laughing and joking. It was really cool. I expect that's what people enjoy about going to conferences, is meeting, you know, like-minded people. So for that reason, it's really cool. But 249 is steep, man. And when I see, you know, I know there's an offer that it's 149, I always think, well, just make it 149 then. And maybe even have like a day pass. So if you're only interested, say, for example, in going to see Lou or Chris speak, you can just buy a pass for those days. And it helps people kind of, it just helps to have options. And the more options and the more accessibility to the event there is, the less people are going to have a problem with you charging money with it, I think.
Yeah. So let's break that down. $249 is £178 currently with the exchange rate. So let's call it 175. Again, you can work that out in your own kind of currencies. It's over 4 days. You're looking at what, £50 to £75 or dollars a day for that. Now, you're right. There's the coupon code that people can use to get that off, which they've came out with straight away. Whether that was intended or not, or just because of any perceived backlash, I don't know. But that takes it down to like $149, which is like just over £100. £25 a day. Do you know what? Honestly, just because of the nature of these events, personally, I don't have an interest in a virtual conference for that. I wouldn't pay that. And do you know what? There's a lot of virtual conferences that have been on that are free that I don't watch. And I've seen other people make that comment as well. And just to be honest, you know, I don't have that interest. I may watch the odd bit or the odd highlight, but I'm usually quite happy seeing other people's conversation about it, or people that do go and watch these events and kind of following up in that sense. If there's something for the podcast, then I'll go and watch what I have to. But yeah, for me, I completely understand people's reaction. I know with these things, there's always an element of it's money and people are money making and stuff. So I'll be interested to speak to the guys organizing it to find out a little bit about the breakdown of those costs. And I've actually reached out to Contact in the Desert as well, if they can provide me with any statistics or, you know, analytics on the event, as in the number of tickets they sold or a rough number compared to what they sell for those face-to-face events. And I think that's the big thing that's missing, or the best thing about these events when they are on normally, you know, pre-COVID, is the meeting up people, as people have said on Twitter, the hangabout in the lobbies, the meeting new people, meeting faces you've spoken to online for years, and getting to have that kind of human interaction. And even being able to look around and see, oh, there's Chris Mellon sitting at a desk over there signing his t-shirts, or there's Lou Elizondo over there signing a poster and a book, and there's Rich Dolan, you know. So that's all gone with this. And I get that people like us have this podcast. You've got a host. Now, there's a huge number of shows, thanks for choosing to listen to us, that you can pick from out there that are audio or video based. And what's the difference between a virtual conference and me sticking on someone's podcast and a playlist for a few episodes? Because a lot of us going long enough have a lot of these people on as guests, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. So you kind of get an opportunity to talk to these people on your terms anyway. But that's exactly why I feel like, you know, a day pass, or say, for example, a pass per name, you know, you could just kind of say, I want to see Lou's conversation, and you could pay, I don't know, $5-$10 to just do that bit. I just wonder if something like that would help the organizers make enough funds to run it smoothly, just because you're giving more people, you know, a lower bar of access.
Did you see they had come out and mentioned, a lot of people's point was it's virtual, so there's no overheads, but did you see they did come out and say the actual virtual space had a price tag on it?
Yeah, and I think it's always silly to kind of say there's no overheads. Of course, there's different overheads, you know, if you compare buying a CD to buying or to streaming something.
Yeah.
There are a lot less overheads, but there's still server space and so on and so forth, and electricity running that. And, you know, there are always overheads to these events. So I've not really been behind that kind of comment.
Yeah. I mean, so on the poll, we had over 800 votes, nearly 850. And almost half, 47.3% of people said they would pay nothing for one of these events. They wouldn't want to pay. The next bracket was $1 to $50. Around 38.7% of people said they would pay around that for it, for a virtual event with good names. That's not just this event folks either. I'm looking at, in general, at the virtual conference world, because we've had a few and hopefully they're going to be falling by the wayside in the sense that we can get back to meeting each other again and seeing these people in person. But 9.7% for $50 to $100, and then $100 plus was 4.3%. So it really does drop down to that minimal number of people who are looking to spend that kind of money. Now, again, it's with these sorts of events, is it a case of, you know, we would rather get a few people spending a higher amount than a bigger number spending a much lower amount, but we don't make the same money? That's probably a fair argument, and one for the marketing people out there to talk about. But yeah, for me, it's just personally, and it's always personal, this, you know, I want any events like these to do well, and I've got no issues with any of the people that do them making some money. And they're giving up their time. The big thing for me with these events, and it's the same with, and I've talked about this and been honest, Skinwalker Ranch, the show, Unidentified, the show, let's even say like the Phenomenon movie documentary, anything like that, let's talk about the highest level or highest quality stuff, in my opinion, you're not going to get huge revelations on something that's pre-recorded or behind a paywall like that. Because it's what you're getting is opinion, maybe some well thought out opinion. You might get some fresh stories. I'm thinking here of, like, you know, Lou Elizondo particularly might share like a new case or something he'd heard or can now talk about. But you're not going to get, and again, just from a character point of view, I don't believe people like Lou or Chris Mellon or anyone else for that matter with any models would hold back information to share when there was a charge for it. That's not what they're in it for. So really, I think you're paying for the people, some speculation, some detailed analysis and some follow-up. I don't think you're ever paying for that big blowout. And people probably just have to realise that, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. You know, I've loved all of Lou's interviews. But if you were a casual person who wanted information, there's no real reason for you to go beyond, you know, those, the content you just mentioned, and things like that Washington Post interview, and things like that. You know, he chooses all the right platforms to put that information out for free.
Yeah, if I had the cash, if money really was no object, then absolutely, I would have no issue laying down $249 for that. But I personally think there are places I would spend that money elsewhere. For me, virtual conference, those names, genuinely, and this is just me off the top of my head, if it was $20, I would pay, particularly because Chris Mellon doesn't do too many things like this. Lou's put himself out there very graciously. And again, I know I'm talking about Lou and Chris mainly here, but they're the two biggest names, given what they've done in their background. Lou's put himself out there for everyone. You know, he's very kind and has been to us for his time and to a lot of other podcasts and YouTube platforms, and, you know, big or small, he's been there to answer a numerous amount of questions and still does that online as well. Chris Mellon's a bit more enigmatic, but still, for me, if you're looking at something virtual, $20 I would part with to hear Chris Mellon talk at length, and it's not a couple of minutes on the news. You know, face to face, in person, if Chris Mellon came to the UK, I potentially then would be happy to spend a couple of £100 or dollars, depending on the circumstance. And that, you know, if it was an evening with Chris Mellon, I would understand that.
Well, like a date.
But, I mean, that's even more money. Yeah,
I wonder if he likes red or white wine.
Yeah,
cats or dogs. I do agree, though. You know, something like Chris coming to the UK and talking and having the chance to do your own follow up with a Q&A at the end. I understand the value in something like that.
Yeah. But again, that's everyone's preference. Same with contacting a desert. I wouldn't have parted with the money they were looking for. But if you're listening to this and you did and you do, then that's excellent, because you see the value in that. I paid for a football, like a soccer season ticket last year that I knew I wouldn't be able to use. And that was in over £500. But that's just how much they cost for a full season of games.
What's football?
Yeah, lol. So I get people would think that's crazy, even just to pay that anyway. But I paid for that knowing I wasn't going to get to go to any games, but I'm supporting my team and my club. And so I can totally appreciate other people who spend their money on Tom DeLonge guitars, you know, all that kind of stuff, Dan. It's,
yeah, yeah,
we've absolutely all got our vices.
That's kind of what I was getting at with that football comment. You know, I'm not into football, but I totally understand that that's your thing and that's where you like to spend your money. We all have our own things, right?
Yeah, totally. So listen, wherever you fall down on the virtual conference argument, I'll have the gents on Friday and we'll put some questions to them. If you have any questions for them, please DM me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, however you can, or ideally email ufouapam@gmail.com, and I'll put those questions to Mark and Tyler. Next up, a little follow-up, Dan. Travis Walton on Jimmy Church. We talked about this a few weeks ago where it doesn't seem to go away, but from what it sounded like, Travis Walton was very defensive on people coming out and claiming the story was fake. There wasn't a whole lot to really add to the story. Is this one that just needs put to bed now between Mike and Travis and those people, that it's been over money, it's been public, and people just have to move on from it?
Yeah, for me, you know when you're talking to someone and you're very passionate about it, but you just see their eyes glaze over? Like, my eyes have glazed over with the conversations between, you know, Travis and Mike and the go-betweens and the back and forth now. It's just, he said, she said, you know, it doesn't change anything. If you believe Travis, then it's not going to convince you otherwise. If you don't believe Travis, it's not going to convince you otherwise. So it's just noise as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And you know what? At least Jimmy Church managed to get Travis Walton on. He doesn't do a whole load of interviews like that, Travis Walton, to be fair. I've reached out as well and I've not been able to contact him, but the story's been told. I think it's one of those things where money's came into it. It's probably due another movie or TV show by the looks of it. That's what's going to be happening. And we'll just move on from there. It is what it is, folks. Next up, a little bit of analysis, our post-game from us, Dan. We interviewed Avi Loeb last week. That was a whole lot of fun. Dan joined me for that interview, which is always nice. And I think Avi, people have appreciated, opened up a little bit more on that one. We've done our best, as we always do.
Didn't he?
Yes, he got quite riled up over a few things.
I want a t-shirt with Avi on it that just says, "We are the scientists."
Ripping open his shirt, like Groundskeeper Willie style from The Simpsons. But no, Avi, it was nice to hear because, like I say, we mentioned it with Ross Coulthart and people like Avi who do numerous interviews in a short space of time, they all start to get repetitive. So it's the host's job, I always feel, to try and keep it fresh and ask something a bit different, find a different angle and go for that. And I think we managed to achieve that with Avi. What were your thoughts now, Dan, after that interview, from what Avi said, you have a time to digest it on the Galileo project itself?
Yeah, I feel like we hit that mark and got some new things from him, including, you know, that passion. But there were a few things that I would have loved to have followed up on. I brought up Roger Penrose during the conversation. Now, Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff have some very interesting, I think they call ORC, O-R, theories about consciousness being like the base of the universe and everything kind of grows from there. And obviously that kind of comes into our subject a bit. And I really wanted to ask Avi about that, but it's such a big conversation that we really didn't have time to kind of get into it. It would have been a one word answer that didn't do it justice. But I did like that, you know, we figured out that he knows the work of Roger Penrose. So he's going to be aware of that consciousness stuff. So, you know, we've put the ball on the tee. Someone else asked the question now. We know that he can answer.
Yeah, that was, and people hear the show, like we had a limited amount of time with Avi and I put in the work beforehand and Dan does with the questions and the format and the layout of what I'm potentially going to be asking. And there was a few questions on consciousness within there and just the way the conversation was going, I get a feel for it as to what I can and can't do in the time I had left. And that was an area I just had to take out this time. But we're in contact with Avi and he will be back on the podcast when the time's right as well. So appreciated his time and looking forward to what the Galileo project are going to achieve in the short term, because I would like to think while they've got this momentum and this initial funding, we start to see some progress quickly from them as well. I would hate to think we're sitting and he didn't say this, he said quite the opposite, but I would hate to be here in 6 months' time that we've not heard anything. You know, he talked about literally having the telescopes in the checkout online.
Yeah.
And it's a case of, yep, let's get those bought. Let's get them on Amazon Prime. And let's get them set up. And that's what I hope we start to see as soon as possible, just to see that there's some wheels in motion.
Yeah, absolutely. And once he goes, someone else is going to go, right? And let's be clear as well, Galileo isn't necessarily the first of these things. It's just the biggest so far, and it has a really nice amount of funding. So I think we're going to see some great results from it. And if it gets to a point where Avi is able to go, hey, look, I took a picture of a Tic Tac, and we can clear up, you know, how many legs it had and whether there were any seams and, you know, stuff like that. At that point, I honestly think the scientists would pour in to study this, because it's one of these things that's what we call a black swan event, right? Like, it's a small thing with huge implications. But the thing about black swan events is that the meaning kind of changed over time. So originally it was used as a kind of sarcastic phrase because black swans weren't thought to exist. And then when they found out, actually they do kind of exist and they're quite common in certain parts of the world, it kind of changed its meaning to something that's mysterious, but is just a fact of the universe that we're unaware of. So, and it'll have profound implications if, you know, we're being visited or if there's plasma life or, you know, whatever it is.
Dan, would you rather see more Galileo Project type formations, or would you rather see more funding for the Galileo Project itself?
That's a trick question. Can I choose both?
Well, no, because you know what I'm thinking? Like, you look just now, we've got Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson, okay? They've got these various different companies that they're putting a lot of money into stuff, right? But they're all trying to achieve the same kind of thing.
But do you think that competition is what drives each of them to kind of push themselves a bit further?
Individually, yes. But when you're looking at what's this going to achieve for, like, the wider, you know, human race and species, and I suppose take out the fact they are trying to make money for themselves and make names for themselves, but can you imagine the three of them got together around a table and went, do you know what, let's pull our resources here, let's see how far we can get, how quickly.
As much as I want that to happen, in a way there's kind of a dark path that comes from those three people getting around the table. You know, hey, they'll figure out how to bust unions, they'll figure out how to own companies, and it'll just go downhill from there, and we'll be in the future, you know?
Yeah, they know all that anyway. But do you know what I mean, though? Like, just why not just, you're all doing things right. Surely you could do a whole lot. But again, that's blue sky thinking, because that goes for anything.
I get you. There's an importance to have separate projects, I think, because it gives you discrete data sets. But like most science, you kind of need a central secure server to feed everything into so you can kind of see patterns. So, for example, you know, we know Skinwalker is being studied. You could compare that data to the data off the coast of Catalina, maybe, or in other areas of the world, you know, maybe where the Havana syndrome stuff is happening, or the Hestelon lights or the Longendale lights and the Min lights, I guess, just to touch on something that Ross brings up. But all of those kind of separate projects should pool together so that we can kind of start to see the patterns and things like that in them. So I think we'll get exactly what you're hoping for, but it'll just start with these few kind of, you know, well-funded efforts. And then once they figure out, because they kind of have to build the sensors to see these things, right? You know, we've been picking them up on radar, we've been picking them up on FLIR, but it's clearly not, it's equipment that's sensitive enough to see them, but it's not built to track those things. It's built to track friendlies, it's built to track, you know, adversary tech and stuff like that. So Project Galileo may be being really well funded. Within 2 years, they might build a bit of kit that can reliably identify these things. And then suddenly all these other projects are going to start, you know, rolling that kit out and being a lot more productive and getting a lot more data. Kind of happens with telescope projects as well. You know, the Hubble telescope is amazing, but the telescopes, the cheaper telescopes we're building now, that are a fraction of the cost of that initial Hubble, that couldn't exist without Hubble, are much, 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 much better than Hubble. So it would be nice if we could start with a lot of well-funded projects, but it takes that first one to get that ball rolling, I think.
Do you know what? This is born from my frustration of, for example, watching the old Power Rangers with my little boy over the last year or two, and how every episode's exactly the same, where they fight the bad guy individually, but then they realise when they put all the Zords together to make the Megazord, they can defeat them really, really. And it's just like, why even bother to fight them individually? Just join together straight away, put the five machines, six machines, and then and you can beat them with like one yeah. move. That's it.
Use the sword straight away, like Pacific yeah. Rim, right? Like just use the sword.
Yeah. Yeah, straight to the big sword. But yeah, that's it. So yeah, looking forward to more from the Galileo project, and hopefully we hear from that quickly and soon. Chris Mellon's made a few comments online recently. It's been nice to see his social media presence keeping up. One that caught my eye was the New York Times had put out a piece about to reach out or not to reach out to the stars. That is the extraterrestrial question. Chris Mellon's comment on Twitter was this on July 22nd. Evolution is probably as universal and fundamental to biology as gravity is to physics. And evolutionary history shows that interspecies symbiosis is the exception and does not develop instantly. We need to be careful about what we broadcast to the stars. What do you take away from that, Dan? Do you start to think threat narrative?
A little bit. It's kind of... Have you ever heard of a book called The Three-Body Problem?
I have now.
So it's basically this really cool kind of space opera written by a Chinese author. And it's really interesting because it begins essentially with another race picking up our signal and starting to travel towards us. And then they'll send a probe that's a bit faster than them. And it'll kind of disrupt our particle accelerators so we don't make certain discoveries and things like that. And then when they get here, it'll be easier to invade. So it kind of made me think of that. But also, once again, I'm going to bring up contact. You know, we are essentially advertising ourselves all the time. Once, I think it was the Nuremberg, not Nuremberg, the Berlin, I'm going to say festival, but it was Hitler, basically, was one of the most powerful first broadcasts. So if another species was pointing kind of a telescope at the sky and were like, oh, let's see what these guys are about, and they pointed at Earth, the first thing they would see is...
Oh, was it the Nuremberg Rally?
The rally, that's it. I couldn't think of the... Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the one. So that would be the first thing they would see. So they might judge us based on that, you know? And so we should be a bit more mindful about what we're putting out. Obviously, things are kind of, you know, we use cables and things like that for TV, but we still have very, very powerful radios, more powerful than back then. Putting out certain things from certain parts of the world, kind of saying, hey, we're here. And it's probably a good idea to grapple with the question, you know, what are we going to do if someone comes and says hello? It's a good idea to figure out the answers to that before that happens.
Well, obviously you'd put me on to the new War of the Worlds remake. It's not new, it's a couple of years old now. Season two just started on Disney Plus, and you've been telling me about that for a while to watch it, and how it's from different countries and different people's perspectives of a pretty realistic, for the most part, you know, aliens pick up our signal and they come here. And like you say, it's a science laboratory, as far as I've watched so far, has been sending out the signal, and these other beings have picked up on the signal and come here, and they launch a pretty devastating attack on the planet, don't they? Straight off the bat, killing most people.
Yeah, they do. That first episode was, for me... You know, when people think of destructive alien races, we always go to like Independence Day and stuff like that. But that
missiles and explosions and stuff, yeah. And that's not what happens.
Whereas in this remake of War of the Worlds, it's very like, it's understated, and it happens kind of almost while we're all asleep and kind of wrapped up in other things. And it happens very quickly. You know, it goes from quite a civilized world to, oh crap, suddenly we don't have any electricity, and where am I going to buy bread to eat in the morning or something? You know, it's a really, really stark difference.
Do you know what? And on that series itself, just as a sidebar, it's really depressing. I get, you know, it's post-apocalyptic, but every single episode, a number of children seem to die. Like, I'm amazed. And then I've just finished the one, and I'll just, no spoilers, but in the hospital, Dan, with the babies.
Yeah.
And they have to decide whether they stay or whether they leave the newborn babies. And yeah, I was like, as a parent, it's some heavy stuff, but I've kind of plodded my way through it, because it's keeping me coming back to watch more. But it's quite a hyper-realistic idea of, we send out these signals, someone, you don't know who's going to pick it up and how they're going to react. So like you say, if that's what Chris Mellon's kind of getting at there, do you think we have the right people looking at that, those sorts of scenarios, or is that still very much country by country? Is that something the UN's got together with and discussed?
Well, we'd be looking at stuff like SETI, we'd be looking at stuff like the new telescopes being built, looking at the stars, the telescope on the moon that China wants to build. Those are going to be the first places that any signal like that is picked up. So unfortunately, we probably have Seth Shostak on the front lines, kind of, you know, deciding if something is a wow signal or not.
Who is now part of the Galileo project, which was quite divisive.
But it's nice to see him come around, right, to open-mindedness. I almost think he was waiting for a number of people to put their hands up first before he went, you know what, I am actually interested in the answer to this, and I don't know, truly.
I'll play devil's advocate. I hope it's that, and I'm all for people coming round. Okay, I won't be spiteful or hold a grudge as much as I've been negative or critical of Seth Shostak in the past, and still am. But is it a case of $1.75 million being attached to a project makes a difference
money
to someone
talks.
Like him?
We've always said this, you know, whether it's a government program, whether it's, it doesn't matter what it is. The economy and everything follows money in this world, whether you like it or not, unfortunately. So yeah, probably that was like a, you know, a moth to a flame, but at least he's on the right path, I would say.
Yeah. And it's good to see his social media presence keeping up. And I am genuinely going back to the virtual conference, interested in hearing or reading potentially what Chris Mellon has to say as part of that. He's a very mysterious character.
He is, and he spent a lot of time away from the limelight, right?
He has, yep. On that, one of the last things I want to talk about is Chad Underwood on Jeremy Corbell. It was high noon last week at one point, and Jeremy Corbell released an interview with Chad Underwood, and there's been some fallout as well from that as well. Where do you want to go through this a little bit, Dan? Because I know I was talking to you before about
sure.
it. And so what's been kind of happening?
There's a document referred to as the executive summary. If you search for like Gimbal or Flea or something, Tic Tac and Nimitz with TTSA, one of the pages it'll take you to, they had a document that was referred to as an official document that was put together, you know, not too long after the encounter. And this document has been passed around for a number of years, and a number of people in the community swear by it as gospel. We've known for a while that the document was not necessarily exact. It was just one piece of, you know, our kind of our evidence lineup, we'll say. You know, for Encore, we had it on the table, but it wasn't our focus. And it turns out from this Underwood interview that the document, that the comments contained in the document from Underwood himself are comments that he says he didn't make, which kind of pulls the rug a bit on that particular document, which in a way I'm fine with, because there's a certain skeptic in the community that swore by it. And he would always go back and nitpick using that document. So I quite like that we kind of have a little bit of, you know, a question mark over that document. But it basically seems that the term official document could be seen in many different ways. Everyone took it to mean, oh, maybe ATIP wrote this. Maybe this is an official US government thing. And a number of people over the years, like Black Vault, have said, no, it's not. The formatting's not right. It's not, you know, there's something wrong with this. And it basically comes down to now that people have figured out that it's a BAS document, which is a Bigelow Aerospace document. And we know that Bigelow was involved with OSAP and kind of at the start of all this. So it seems that it was a document written by someone on staff there. And that's pretty much where we are with it. Dave Beattie has, and I don't think he needed to do this. He publicly apologized for the Nimitz encounters, because it also traded off that document and included a lot of those details. But what I would say with Dave is that he did the legwork and he went and spoke to people who were there, right? So mm-hmm. I don't think it's quite as, oh, well, we can't refer to that anymore now. You know, he did a great job with that, and it's still on the evidence table again. You know, it's a way of informing people about the story. But I just think it's taken a few people by surprise that the document may not be as, I'm doing bunny ears, legit as they thought.
And this is, for me, potentially going back to the scenario of, with any piece of evidence or document or article or story, if one small piece of it becomes or gets called into question, it seems to just crumble the whole thing for, and is that, do you think here that's what is in danger of happening when, in a case of, it's just actually one small part of it's a little bit wrong or incorrect or just been misinterpreted?
Yeah, I think so. It's possible that that phrase official documentation was used to kind of play up its import. And it became a really central piece of evidence for some people. But for me, that one document has not been all that this rides on. You know, we have Dave Fravor given interviews. We have Alex given interviews. We have Chad Underwood given interviews now. Those details are there for us to hear from the people who were there. We don't need a piece of paper in between us anymore.
Yeah, interesting one though. And like you say, it was good of Dave Beattie to come out and say what he said, but probably unnecessary given we don't know 100% yet that affects the validity of anything else within the documents and whatnot. So it's not as if the event didn't happen. You know, that's it. One comment doesn't make or break the whole case. So,
yeah.
But where we're at right now, in a bit of a lull in terms of huge major news or developments, then that's where we're at. People are going to pick up on this stuff, aren't they? And that's where hopefully pods like this help people kind of break down and digest the news, which we keep hearing is helping folks out there, and it helps us do it as well. Dan, before we finish up, is there anything you want to bring up or discuss in terms of news?
Well, just on that, you know, the Underwood interview, I'm just going to touch on this. Someone on Twitter called Alpha_Check, if you want to go follow them, I'd recommend you do. They know the inside of plane systems pretty well, and they've made some very technical videos going over basically why this is a remarkable event and kind of what the pilots would have seen from inside the cockpit and so on and so forth. I'd really, really recommend you check out their YouTube channel. But they basically listened to the interview, and as someone who I see as an expert, I kind of went to him afterwards, and he'd posted kind of a little summary. So I just wanted to go through that summary here. So he says, one, Underwood, and let's be specific here, Underwood is the person who filmed the Tic Tac video that people have seen so much. So Underwood confirms that the target was acquired on FLIR, which was slave to his radar. He wasn't just wangling the FLIR about and pick something up, like some people have said. He saw it on radar, he went to it, and the FLIR picked it up because of the slave. He reports he wasn't interviewed or contacted for the executive summary. That's what we've just been talking about, in which he was quoted as saying there was no jamming indication. So again, certain people have kind of questioned that jamming bit of testimony, but we've heard it from many, many different places now. Underwood confirms he was vectored to the object by Princeton. This confirms that Spy 1 was not glitching. The contact was confirmed on multiple radars. So, glitch thing out the window. The object was on his SA, that's a situational awareness screen, from off-board sensors as well as his own. So it's worth noting here that all of the kind of ships and planes in the fleet all feed into one system, so they can all see what each other sees, and it enables things like firing over the horizon where they can't see and things like that. All of those different systems were picking it up and feeding it into that main system. This 100% removes possibility of friendly aircraft. He confirms that there was a jamming indication. So basically, that's three sources now that have talked about the jamming. The airspace at the cap point, unlike some people have speculated, it was vacant of friendly or commercial aircraft. So it wasn't a friendly F-18 that just had its transponder off. He was able to identify all the aircraft in the wider battle space. So there was no one missing to be over there where they shouldn't have been, where they could have been filmed and, you know, look like a Tic Tac. Wasn't the case. Princeton had continuous track of the object until intercept. So, I'll read the next bit. The object's disappearance was corroborated by the Princeton and E2 Hawkeye, and they fed back to Underwood after he lost it off his screen that their radars were clean. So this thing did just disappear. Underwood also says that at the end of the video, he aggressively maneuvered his aircraft to reacquire the object. And when he saw it gone, and the Princeton and the Hawkeye team said it was not on their radar, that's when he was a bit freaked out about it.
Overall, do you think we've heard the last of this incident has everything come out that's going to come out?
No, because he specified there's more video of the radar screen.
Are we going to see that?
Probably not, because it's the kind of thing that would be classified, but it's exactly the kind of data that we really want, right?
Well, let me ask you this, Dan. You have the option to choose to release to the UFO Twitter community or UFO community, whoever it may be, okay? More information on the Nimitz Princeton Tic Tac event, whether that be corroborating radar data, etc., etc., or you can hear about a new event. What would you rather?
It's a good question. Again, I want both, but I know you won't let me choose that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the first one, just because there's been, and to be clear, that is picking more data for the Nimitz encounter with the Tic Tac.
Yeah.
Purely because there's been so much nitpicking over it that I feel like it's a really purified case. You know, we know we have multiple sensors. We just don't have the data. And from all the eyewitness accounts, you know, even with Kevin over the few days, kind of seeing the objects fall like snow, I believe he said, on the radar. It would be great to kind of get the 3D kind of picture of the battle space and be able to see that erratic movement from all those different sensors. I think something like that would change the game, because then there's no nitpicking that can be done. We're just seeing what they saw.
Awesome. Dan, good talk. Listen, folks, coming up, we have this episode releasing today, which is Wednesday, the 4th of August. We are going to record a special What If. This one's been in the pipework for a couple of weeks now, and we got Patreon comments a while back on What If... dot dot dot. Not a Marvel ripoff either. Like, I didn't know that was a thing and thought of that months ago, and then Marvel have come out with it. So Marvel ripped me off. Wanted to do a day after disclosure chat, and just it's going to be myself and Dan talking through our own, but also your comments on what's going to change the day after we find out, you know, whether it's the UFO on the White House lawn, the government's coming out holding hands to tell us all what's been going on, or whether it's just a huge UFO in the sky in broad daylight, you know, what changes in the world. And we've got a lot of interesting points to bring up on that. That will go available early access and ad-free on patreon.com/thatufopodcast, and it will go on to Apple Podcast subscriptions. You sign up for the 2-week free trial, and then if you want to keep it on, you pay, it's a couple of dollars, a couple of pounds, a couple of euros, whichever your currency may be, for early access and ad-free bonus content on there too. So please, if you can, support the podcast. If not, the episodes do come out within a few days or a week or so of each other anyway, so thank you very much. We do appreciate that. As well as that, we've got the interview with Mark and Tyler from the upcoming virtual conference with Lou, Chris, Mellon and co, and we'll be putting your questions to them as well, so send us those over. And we have some other guests coming up I will announce in the coming days. Remember, keep an eye out online later on for the listener call-in shows. You can book in over the next few days for those slots, and that will be getting released sometime next week. Usually those are in two parts as well, just due to the number of callers we get. And if you're listening to this thinking, I'd love to call up, but I'm not sure, I'm a little nervy, or I don't think my comments will be worthy of it, please do call up, speak to us. It might be myself, it might be myself and Dan. Might be myself and another, just depends who we can get on at that time. But it's always good to talk to you, so we really would want to hear from you. Dan, good speaking to you.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you. It's nice to digest everything that's gone on in the past, you know, 2 weeks or so.
Absolutely. And we didn't even talk too much about all the Twitter fighting.
No, we didn't.
We should. No, we won't. Right, folks. Anyway, thanks for listening. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
The wasn't a Tic Tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little grass. Meditated again and stayed full on meta. I can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I coughed up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think they'd be, then it's you and me and us and we and him and her and that and she and that thing over there and what's that, Jake? If we're being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.